Hi, everyone. Welcome to The Psychology of Work, Why People Do What They Do, a podcast exploring the science and stories behind high-cohesion, high-performing teams. My name is Dr. Bobbi Wegner. I'm a lecturer at Harvard in organizational psychology and the founder of Groups. In each episode, we dive into the minds of industry experts to uncover what drives team and individual dynamics, tackle real-world challenges together, and share actionable insights to help teams feel and function their best. Thanks so much for joining, and let's get started. Hi, everyone. I'm super excited to be back today. Today on The Psychology of Work, I'm joined by two amazing leaders shaping the future of talent and culture inside a company that's been around for more than 150 years. First is Christine Kinahan. She's the Chief People Officer at Welch's. Christine leads the company's people strategy, bringing experiences across complex, different organizations, including leadership roles at Schneider Electric and SharkNinja. Her work focuses on building cultures where performance, growth, and purpose can coexist. I'm also joined by Amanda Raymond, who's the Director of Talent Development at Welch's. Amanda leads leadership development talent programs designed to help individuals and teams grow in a rapidly changing workplace. Before Welch's, she had learning and development roles at JobCase, DataRobot, and the TJX companies. So together, they are a power duo. They're navigating a fascinating leadership challenge. How do you evolve talent, culture, and innovation inside a deep legacy brand, one with history, tradition, and identity, while really preparing the organization for the future of work? Today, we'll explore what it means to lead people and culture in that kind of environment and what lessons other leaders can take from it. So welcome, Christine and Amanda. What did I miss here? You know, who are you guys?
Well, thank you for that very warm introduction. I'm super happy to be here. The only other thing I would add is, I don't know, we're both moms, we're working women who have careers and children and activities and all the things being pulled in different directions. So that also adds to complexity of how we show up as leaders as well. Amanda, anything else to add?
No, nothing to add. Bobbi, thank you so much for the introduction. And we're excited to be here to chat all things psychology of work with you.
Yeah, me too. I love it. Yeah. And thanks for adding the mom comment too, Christine, right? It's like, we always joke, Charlotte, who's our COO, has three kids. I have three kids too. And we're like, if you need something done, give it to a mom. Cause you can like lead this, you know, monstrous organization, do all the things and like raise a handful of kids at the same time and just get it all done.
Right. And it's changed how I lead. If anything, it's made me absolutely more empathetic and aware. Being a single woman driving for change and all the things that happen, it's just gotten me to view the world absolutely differently. And I think it's an important addition to my leadership skill set.
Well, I can't wait to hear more about that. Like, let that filter through just as the conversation goes, because a lot of this is how you all do what you do. But, you know, Welch's is really a brand we all grew up with, right? It's like a very recognizable brand. It's so fun when I'm in the market and I see it. I'm like, I know those guys. You know, I'm sort of like rooting from the supermarket. But how do you think about innovation inside a company with such a strong identity and history?
I mean, I guess I'll go first, Amanda, feel free to compliment or add or challenge. You know, we don't change for the sake of change at Welch's. Like, we change so that we have and serve our growers. We're a cooperative model. So we have finite funds and a finite timeline like many companies do, but we have to be very choiceful because at the end of the day, a cooperative model is really different. Like, we aren't beholden to Wall Street, we're beholden to Main Street. And I think it's important to note. So when we do innovation and transformation, we have to be very thoughtful about the amount of risk we can take. And we have to be thoughtful about the funds in which we try to make big and bold bets that achieve the response in the market that we want to see and that our consumers and our customers are really happy with our products. And we have a real strong ear to the ground to make sure what we're doing is evolving. And we want to continue to do that more rapidly as everything changes. In this post-COVID world where you're being interrupted and constantly fed new information so much faster through social media and, you know, ads that used to be super stagnant and you'd see the same commercial a million times over and now you're being influenced by a multitude of different platforms. And especially as a mom, as we talked about, like what you feed your children and what you put in your bodies is so important. And that's why we love working for Welch's and we think that it's the products that we sell we're very proud of.
And Welch's has innovated over time. I mean, the original grape juice that was created 150 years ago is not the same product that it is today. And so we have evolved with consumer needs. We've evolved with the times. And to Christine's point, where it's being thoughtful about what we're focusing on and where we're focusing our energy. But as the consumers are changing, as preferences are changing, and we need to stay on top of that to ensure that we're meeting their needs as we continue to change and grow.
Yeah. And what is a cooperative model? Like, people are probably hearing that and being like, cool, what does that even mean? But like, what does that mean for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tax status, first of all, but it's just a unique structure. And every cooperative is different. And there's a lot of different cooperatives out there. I mean, the one closest to us that I always think of is Ocean Spray. You know, you have Tillamook, you have Cabot Creamery. So you have that in the agricultural and dairy space, Land O'Lakes as an example. And you also have it in the insurance space as well. So there's a variety of different ways in which people have cooperative. They're member owned. So that means that we have currently, and it changes every day based on contracts and things when it comes to the grapes. But I think current point we have, 607 growers, growing families, if you want, who we're responsible for, and we take their grapes. So we're in the industry where we're responsible for taking everything they produce. So if you think about it from a supply and demand opportunity, what CPG product or food and beverage company takes all their inventory up front first, not knowing what that inventory could be a great year, could be a rains events, dry heat, whatever, impacting the product that you're about to sell, and then are responsible for then carving out a sales and marketing plan based on the tonnage or the bricks, which is the sugar amount, which we get that we need to sell to market. So we exist as the sales, marketing, manufacturing arm, and we try to make and generate as much grower returns as we possibly can for these 607 farming families. And so we have a different model structure where we have a national team, which is the agricultural side that's responsible for the grower-owner relationships. And then we're also a traditional CPG where we have a sales, a brand and innovation team, an HR, people culture team, general counsel, those types of things. And we are unique at Welch's where we have two separate boards. So we have a board that's made up of all grower owners and then a board that's made up of five outside directors and five of those grower owners that are elected. And so they help us shape our strategy and we utilize them to the best of our abilities because at the end of the day, it's all about grower owner returns. And for us, I commented that it's Main Street. The trickle down economics are if our growers do well, the communities that they live and work in and serve in do very well because of that.
Mm-hmm. And that's what draws so many people to Welch's, that you're working for a mission-driven organization. You are working for family farmers, that you can actually meet them, that you can understand their stories and see the product go straight from the farm into the product that's in the stores. And so when you talk to people about why they stay at Welch's, why they join Welch's, so much of that has to do with the grower owner story.
Yeah. Having dinner with somebody who owns the company at their dinner table is wild for somebody who's coming from like a public company.
Yeah.
So Amanda and I have had dinners and coffee on porches of people whose grandfathers joined Welch's back in the 50s. And to see that when we do well, they're able to invest in harvesters and hire more people and buy more acreage. It's just like you can see the impact that you're having. Where working for public companies, you see the stock going up, right? And you see the people who invested getting wealthier and wealthier, which is great. But it just hits different when you see that these people are thanking you now that they can invest in a piece of farming equipment, which sometimes is $800,000, which is a huge chunk of cutting into their profits and what they need to look at for stabilizing their future business, which is the grapes in which they own and the acreage in which they own.
And I'd say when you think about kind of the innovation, the question that you had led with, that is a lot of the impetus for that and a lot of the reason. And people understand we want to do right and we want to do well for our grower owners because we see the impact it's having. So we understand that we need to innovate in order to keep momentum and keep pace to sustain our model and to sustain our grower owners over multi-generations.
Yeah, it's so powerful. And I wonder, I didn't know as much about that until I really met you guys, right? And then to think about there's 600 families. Like, that's a lot of families, but it's not that many families. You can like count heads there, right? And these are like real people, real farmers, and farming is a really unforgiving industry, right? There's a lot that goes in. There's a lot of cost. There's like things that make it really things that could be out of people's control, right? Or in your
Absolutely. The weather. The weather is a big one.
Yeah, it's really the weather. It's really so cool that that's really who you're serving at the end of the day. And when you think, it sounds like when you think about innovation, it's both on like the product side, but also on like the farming side, right? How are you going to be doing this? And there's such a marriage, it sounds like, and innovation kind of cuts through and all these different levels in really meaningful ways.
Yeah. And it's so important to know where your food comes from these days, right? Yeah. And so Amanda and I have gone to so many vineyards and eaten right off the vine. This amazing product that tastes absolutely delicious. And what I cannot replicate for you right now is the smell of the vineyards. It is intoxicating. Mm-hmm. It just, the sweetness in the air, and it just gets us excited for harvest and what the future is going to hold. So it's just one of those things from an HR perspective that it's amazing to go out and see, quote unquote, our product being grown. I mean, you can't think of anything more sustainable than farming. Where every year they're nurturing and taking care of the ground, the soil, the vines, and hoping everything works in their direction to have a successful harvest.
I'd say I also think it brings a level of resilience to our employees, because you see, you know, you mentioned the hard work that it takes to be a grower owner, to be a farmer, that if it's harvest and your tractor breaks down, you can't stop. That is your harvest. That is your Super Bowl every year. And so we take that mentality into the business. And that's how we get back up and we keep going and we take risks and we try and we iterate. And we know that not everything we do is going to work, but we have to get up and we have to do it again for our growers in the same way that they get up every day, no matter what the conditions are, and they tend to their grapes.
And we have an 8-hour turnaround. Not many companies can say that it's from cutting off the vine to being processed. So all of our plants, all of our amazing manufacturing plants are right where we grow. We're not moving product. We're not moving our agriculture in giant trucks all over the world, right? They are being processed right in the soil, in the area, in the regions that day, in many cases, when they're cut. From 8 hours when it's being cut off the vine to when it's at the processing center. So that's what makes it an amazing product. And so harvest is our Super Bowl, which is like September, October, November. And there's so much prep and effort that goes into that, but so much respect for our manufacturing employees, because we really ask a lot of them during that time, and they really care so much about doing such a good job for the growers, because they know this comes but one time a year. Mm-hmm. And we ask a lot of them, and the growers ask a lot of us, vice versa, just to make sure that process goes really smooth, safely, and timely, so that everything works out. And so you get that grape juice at the end of the line, or that jam, or that jelly. It's made fresh, and that's what's really important to us.
I don't know if you can tell, but we, just like the rest of the employees, have a ton of pride in the work that we do.
Yeah, you can feel it. You know, it's like, we didn't even like let you all know this was not one of our planned questions, but I can feel you lighting up as we talk about this part of it.
Yeah, because I think as HR professionals, and I think that this is very true, like, it's so important that you get to know the business and you understand how the company you work for makes money, and you understand down to the forklift driver that you last hired, all the way up to the CEO, and all the job descriptions in between, and how it's supposed to work and how it's supposed to transform, so that the people like Amanda can build the talent strategies, can anticipate the competencies that are going to be needed in the future, because we're out there understanding the manufacturing process, because we're out there understanding the sales process, so that we can make an impact and that we're anticipating instead of reacting.
Yeah, I can hear, you're making me think, like, I'm hearing like the people strategy part of this, just like in the way you're talking, like the values part of this. And, you know, like, I was meeting with a sports psychologist this morning, and I said, and we're talking about people stuff. And I was like, you know, in professional sports teams, it's interesting because the sports team in organizations shapes the broader culture, right? If you're the Celtics, the actual team is really deeply shaping the organization around. And in a lot of other organizations, it's much more like top down versus like team level up and out. And I'm hearing that in what you're saying in a different way, right? It's like farmers are the owners, are the people that are the center, and that their kind of values and the way they approach the world and work is really embedded in the organization. And I don't even know if you all know this, but I grew up on a farm, like a small farm. We had a landscape and nursery company, but it's like, and I remember my earliest investor, he like came back. He was like from outside of the Massachusetts, came over basically to where I grew up. He was like, oh, this is where you learn how to work. Like I just see it. Here, I started to work at our like landscape and nursery company when I was in third grade. I learned to drive a bobcat and bulls and horses and cows and all the, you know, sheep, all the things. But that ability to like just work is different, kind of a skill that you only learn when you like get your hands in something and try to, you know, figure it out and adapt.
Yeah, it's so critically important. And our most of our plants are 24/7.
Yeah.
Operating in these types of environments, particularly when it is harvest. And so it's so important that they understand the impact to what they're receiving, process it, and everything's done the right way. So there's so much respect for our manufacturing population. I come from a global supply chain background, and people have a lot of choice in the world about the jobs and the careers. And I constantly am telling people, like, we need to continue to invest in manufacturing. We need to continue to invest in the skill sets that are going to be required there. Not everything is going to be taken over from AI. And it's so hard sometimes to find some of that talent because people have made choices, you know, 15, 20 years to get college degrees or do certain things. And there are very strong careers in manufacturing that are can be super successful. And the plant frontline supervisor to me is the most critical job that we have in the entire, all of Welch's. Like it really, we are beholden to the people that serve in that role and do the best that they can that role because they are the linchpin between our hourly employees, getting them to work safely and understand what they're working for and their productivity goals and escalating issues that they see ahead of time so we can maintain these production, very tight production schedules. And also, you know, we're in food and manufacturing, right? In food and beverage. And it's so important that we have the highest of quality standards that they are responsible for. So when I look at like the skill sets and the jobs of the future, like that's where I want people to get really excited about because that's where we need people to start really thinking about what they want to do and that they can have very successful jobs and careers, I will say, to become operations managers and plant managers. There's so much growth trajectory in manufacturing where you don't even need a college degree and make a lot of money doing that type of work. So I'm trying to tell people that as often and as loud as I can.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And bringing it back, Bobby, to something you said and tying it to that, I think what we try really hard to do is to tie the work that they're doing in manufacturing and down to the hourly population to help them understand the final product. And so much mm-hmm. from the grower all the way through to make it on shelves is this, we talk about the symbiotic relationship or the power of we, because we understand that we all need one another. Mm-hmm. And it's not that the growers can just make their product because then it needs to come and it needs to be processed in our plants. And in order for us to be able to have product to market and to sell, we need to be able to ensure that our plants are processing it and that they have the resources and support that they need. So I think it's this really important symbiotic relationship. And we talk a lot about the power of we or the power of Welch's and how we all work together and how we are all one team in order to mm-hmm. bring it to life.
Yeah, you're making me think there's so many moving parts in what you're describing. So thinking about the different types of roles within Welch's, right? From the frontline worker to the executives to the marketing to all the things like, and different like across the layers, right? And then, so there's that kind of like vertical, I guess. And then you have this other thing, which is kind of old guard, new guard, potentially. I don't know. Actually, you tell me, but I see this in other legacy companies that there's like the traditionalists and people have been around for a long time who like really get it. And then this tension between people who are like driving the innovation, the newness, and that can be something that's challenging to manage on the people side of it. Right. So I'm just wondering for you all as the people who are responsible for that strategy, like how do you even think about this? How do you bring people together? How do you navigate this? How do you talk about this? How do you respect tradition and also hold innovation? Like, how do you, what's the communication like around that?
Yeah, I would say, I think working at other companies that have been longstanding, not nearly 150 years, it's something that I've run into across the board, and it's more of the people and the way things are done. And now we're changing the way things are done. And that's uncomfortable to anyone. And so you think about a change curve, which is, you know, within psychology, everyone kind of falls somewhere along there. And so I think it's how you bring people along on the change curve, no matter how long they've been there. The ones that are newer to an organization are more excited naturally because they've joined this company. They've been sold a vision for like what's to come in the future that may not have been there 10 years ago when the other individuals have started. And so how do you bring people along with you and talk about the benefits to it? But again, it's all rooted in what Christine had shared from the beginning that, you know, this is all in service to our grower owner. So there's a really important what's in it for me when you sell it that way of tying it back to the work. But certainly we do face those challenges. And to me, they're not much different than challenges I've seen in other organizations of bringing people along.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I would go maybe a step further that right now we're treating transformation as an operating model. It's being embedded in everything we do, even from an application of a topic that we call Simplify and a task force to really look at where we can move faster and more agile. We're also looking at span of control constantly, because if you look at the middle of the organization, it's so important that information flows up and down readily. So how do you allow for people to ensure that they're getting the necessary upward feedback timely, and they're also aware of the change and transformation that's happening. So structure, you know, follows strategy, right? And so we're really into constantly evolving and building a brand and innovation team, right? And trying to link those two together faster so we can make faster decisions. I think it's so important that communications from that perspective comes from the CEO, always top down, right? We hold our town halls, we hold skip level meetings, we hold engagement sessions with the leadership team, but it's also about over communicating when we're going through some of the transformational topics. So people understand why the decision was made and how it impacts them directly, because not every transformation that we do or something that would be titled as a change impacts everybody around us. But it's important to inform all that these things are happening so that they have some agency in what's being impacted from their direct work. And I think that that's kind of important that you continue to do upward feedback through pulse surveys and engagement surveys, take that feedback, do something with it, action plan. There's certainly not an organization I've ever worked with that we've been able to solve everything. But I think what's important as an employee is that you're seeing meaningful progress and that you're being updated against that meaningful progress. And the leadership team is truly listening to you and you feel safe to bring issues to them or problems that you have ideas to solve. I think that that's also like the paradox, right? You want to make sure that employees are empowered when things come and arise to take the chance to do the transformational change or come up with the ideas and easily implement it. And they feel like they have the support to do those types of things. And that's the culture and the values and the behavioral set that we've recently changed that we're starting to see a lot of momentum with.
Mm-hmm. Great. Yeah. Anything you want to add there, Amanda? Or
I would just say, you know, when Christine's talking, so prior to Welch's, I spent a couple of years in the startup world. And so there, as much as we are a legacy organization, there are a lot of similarities to being in startups. Mm-hmm. It's the culture that the leadership team has created in that they want to take risks. They want to try new things. They want to iterate. They want to have that, you know, when Christine talks about simplify, that agility model, but also stay true to the fact that we are a 150-year-old brand. Mm-hmm. And so it really melds a lot of what I liked about startup with what I love about Welch's, in that there's the supportive leadership. They want to try new things. They want to keep progressing and being this innovative organization while still being true to Grape and who we are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was really interesting. So yeah, as we were just chit-chatting at the beginning, Christine, I think you went to go grab water and we were talking about innovation. And as I'm listening to you two talk, I'm like, what holds true? Like, I imagine you get people who are more purpose-driven than maybe another CPG type company. There's like really serving the farmer is a strong thing that's held true from what I'm hearing, just like from day one, right? And that is incredibly motivating. And that's like such an asset that Wilches has that's probably different than other similar type organizations. And there was something else I was thinking, with the innovation piece, like, yeah, you're over time, your product is a grape in different form. Right. So the innovation comes from how you're manufacturing that product, but like it's still like the grape and the farmer are fundamental across time, across everything, really. And the innovation comes kind of with like, what do you do with that? It sounds like. So there's a stability, I guess, that's in that. And part of the thing that's holding true is really, I'm thinking about from like an intrinsic motivation, purpose driven lens, people could get behind that pretty easily if they understand how this innovation is going to serve the farmer owner at the end of the day.
Yeah. And you have the systems in place, right?
Yeah.
I don't want to under index on, I think everybody gets excited when there's like a bold idea coming, right? Like, yeah, great. This is amazing. This is going to solve all of our problems, right? But if you don't have the systems in place and the structure in place, like I found that can be even more of a demotivator for people who are like, well, you sold me on this great idea and you've given me no resources and no direction on where we need to start. And so I think that's two things can be true. People can be really excited and still fail, or you can make sure that you have the guardrails in place where you're implementing systems and organizational systems that are able to readily react or proactively meet the needs of your consumers and your customers. And that applies for listening ears internally and listening ears externally and making sure those two meet. And again, I over communicating, even when you don't have an update to say, like you always want to meet that lowest member audience on any basic change management training anybody's ever been to. It's like you want to just constantly make sure you're updating people, because in the lack of information, like perception becomes reality. And you want to make sure that people, if you don't know something, you say, still don't know, but we're trying to work through it. And as soon as we have that information, we'll let you know. And we have a strong leadership team there that's consistent on ensuring that we know what the strategy is. And if things go off kilter, that we're communicating the how and why behind it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know which one of you said it, but it resonated. It's structure follows strategy. And then it made me think, like from a group psychology lens, we're always talking about that balance between structure and unstructure. When is it needed? At what stage? And like what value each has? And I'm thinking in a legacy company, there's inherent structures that are in place. There's like consistency of predictability. But when you're going through innovation and transformation, that's being challenged. And then I think that's where I'm hearing it was like, no, and then you have to use communication to create more structure, to be clear, to bring people along, because there's going to be an uncertainty that's inherent that you kind of lose the value a little bit, like in a good way, of that sort of stability, predictability, because you're changing.
Yeah. And I think organizations, and at Wilches, we are very relationship focused. Like we were first back to the office pre-me 3 days a week. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And we still are Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday in a hybrid, and our plants are 5 days a week. And I share this because within the context of psychology, there's the organizational network analysis. At any organization, I worked at an organization that has 100,000 people. You know, I worked at an organization that had 3,000-4,000 people or 1,000 people. And it still boils down to there are certain people that hold a lot of clout. And it is irregardless of their title. They could be an admin, they could be a project manager, they could be, you know, fill in the blank. But we need to understand who those people are and what level of influence they have to steer the conversation or to support or detract from an idea. And so years ago, I sat through a lot of information around organizational network analysis to make sure when you're doing a change, you identify those people who can be challengers or detractors and try to give them the information they need to guide the decision and also support the change that needs to happen. And so to me, that's why I continue to like talk about over communication, because I really think that that is the unlock. And it's also important as leaders that within our teams and within what we think we can control. We try to identify those people who have a lot of clout and influence, and we try to work with them because people see them as champions. And if they speak well about the product or the process or things like that, that can really set something in motion positively for the company or negatively for the company. So it's important to identify those. And there's a lot of tools and technology that do that now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I just think, kind of wrapping that up, and kind of what it's making me think about is change is coming. Change is continuing to come, and it's coming at a more rapid pace than it ever has before. And so innovation is the name of the game to stay relevant. Mm-hmm. Change is happening to every organization, and it's happening at a faster pace. I couldn't tell you a single organization I talked to that's not going through some type of large, small, you name it, change. And so I think it's, you know, providing that space to employees and to leaders to really drive the messages home, to stay, to communicate with them. You know, we have an amazing story we can tie it to with our grower owners and ground it in, but in every organization, they're going to have to ask the same question of what are they doing to bring their people along as they innovate, which is just, you know, business as usual these days, as they go through changes, as they go through transformations and iterate. We were talking about the Adam Grant book, to think again, every organization having to stay relevant and think about themselves at different periods of time. And so it's from a psychological lens, it's really bringing people along with you, ensuring they have the tools and resources to be successful in their role, and that they're clued into what's going on and how it's going to impact them as often as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we always say, like, communication's like the vehicle of cohesion or connection, right? It's like, with that, you're just two disparate entities, right? Like, communication has to be the thing that's going to connect people. I could chat with you guys all day long. It's like, you know, this is a really fun conversation and really interesting to just learn about your work and what Welch's is doing, and just think about really how you two are leading the people side of this. And it's just so impressive and cool to see. But as we're getting ready to, like, wrap up, is there anything I didn't ask you that you would have wanted me to ask you, or anything that, like, either, you know, we can support you or you want listeners to do, or words of wisdom as we, you know, get ready to wind down?
Go buy our products, support our business, support our growers, go buy some sparkling, go make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. We can always use the support because we are a cooperative. And again, we serve our growers, and we want to continue to do that in every capacity we can.
Amazing.
Yeah. And have people check out job listings. We are always hiring.
Oh, yeah.
So oh, nice.
Come work with us.
Yeah, that's good. Anyone you're, like, looking for in particular right now, or a whole bunch of people? Look in my ears.
It's always evolving, ever evolving.
Okay, yeah. Okay, cool. Well, I just appreciate you two coming. What a fun conversation. And thanks for joining.
Thank you so much, Bobby.
Thank you for having us, Bobby.
Of course.